This is AgriPulse Open Mic, brought to you by the Michael Torrey Management Group, an experienced trade association management firm specializing in the agriculture and food industry. When your organization is facing change, experience matters. Now, AgriPulse Open Mic.
Senator Inhofe, thank you so much for joining us on AgriPulse Open Mic.
Well, it's my honor because I've been working on this for 11 years now, and we're to the point now where I believe we can totally defeat this, but if there's any group that should be singled out as wanting to be more active in this, it would be the ag group, the farmers and ranchers throughout the country. So this is my honor to be here with you, Stuart.
First off, Senator Barbara Boxer, chair of the Environment and Public Works Committee, has announced she will delay markup of climate change legislation modeled after the House passed Waxman-Markey bill until September. Your reaction?
I rejoiced when I heard that because time is not her friend, it's our friend. The more people find out how onerous this thing is, the more pressure we can put on the Democrats, the Obama Democrats who want to get this done. So I think it's not going to be marked up to then. That means that we can go back during the August recess, 4.5 weeks, and make sure that everybody out there knows that their United States Senator could very well be a deciding vote in this. Frankly, I think we have the votes to kill it, but Obama hasn't put his full court press on yet.
Senator Boxer publicly agreed to a Republican demand or request, however you want to refer to it, for a series of hearings on this matter to be held over the next few weeks. There will be one held on agriculture impacts. What do the GOP members of the committee hope to accomplish with this series of hearings?
Well, we wanted to have hearings on the bill, and I said very forcefully yesterday in a public hearing, I said, Senator Boxer, we don't want to just have hearings unless you draft a bill so that we'll have a product to look at and to evaluate. Because what will happen if she wants to have a series of hearings on a bill that doesn't exist, so she can say, if you bring up an objection, oh, no, that's not going to be in our bill. Well, we have to have the bill in front of us, and I think by putting this off to after the August recess, that we'll be able to do that. Now, I want to make sure all of our listeners are aware that they will pass a bill out of the committee, the Environment and Public Works Committee. I said in the committee that there isn't anything that is too liberal for that that the committee to pass, but it'll go to the floor. That's when we can stop it. But it's going to be very important that over this August recess that we inform people as to what a disaster this would be economically for America in general and for the agricultural communities specifically. Let me just give you an example. Of the production of corn, 75% of the operating costs are fuel, electricity, fertilizer, and chemicals. That's where the cost would skyrocket. And that's 71% in to corn, 50% soybeans, 72% wheat. In other words, you get into the cost of fertilizer, which would dramatically go up, and we've watched what's happened to fertilizer in the last 3 or 4 years. You haven't seen anything yet, but if they pass something that is close to the House version of the bill, it's going to be dramatically increased. And so the cost of those things are going to be disproportionately on farm products. And you also have the situation where on the export market, a lot of our exports, by almonds, 80% are exported, cotton, 60%, rice, 50%, wheat, 49%, corn, 18%. Well, if we unilaterally, and by the way, I always say when I have the opportunity, if there's anyone out there who doesn't believe us, who believes Al Gore is right and that man-made gases are causing global warming, which incidentally we're in a cooling period now, but if they really believe it, stop and ask themselves this question. If that's true, why would we in the United States unilaterally do something and impose this tax, cap and trade tax on the American people, and not have it on China and on India and on Mexico and the developing countries? And they have no intention of passing it. And, all you do is increase CO2 if that's your concern, because we would drive our manufacturers overseas to countries like China and where they don't have any emissions restrictions. So you would actually, if you pass this, you would have a worldwide net increase in CO2. So that's how insane this whole thing is. And I mention this because we're talking about the fact that our people, our ag people throughout America are dependent upon exports. And it's going to be awfully hard to find a buyer in a country that doesn't have this huge tax to buy our products.
You represent a state with strong ties to oil and gas production, but Oklahoma is also seeing developments in wind energy. Are there any circumstances under which you could be persuaded to support a cap-and-trade policy?
Well, under no circumstances, because what they'll do, and I want to caution any of the segments of the ag industry, because the strategy behind those who want a cap-and-trade is to make everyone think they're going to be a winner. In other words, they're talking about having credits and selling your credits to somebody else, and you're going to make money. They've gone to the wheat growers, and they've gone to the cattle people, and they've tried to convince them all that they're winners. Now, that answers the question, which would be, logically, if you really thought that CO2 was a problem, why not just have a CO2 tax? And the reason is everybody would know that it's a tax increase. This way, it's a scheme to hide the cost behind a cap-and-trade system. So I don't say we're very strong supporters of wind. In fact, I want nuclear, wind, oil, gas, clean coal, all of the renewables. But we need all of the above if we're going to achieve any independence in terms of running this machine called America and lowering our reliance on foreign countries. So I don't think anything. I would not support any kind of a cap and trade under any circumstances, because it's a scheme of deception so that people won't find out what we're doing to them.
Over in the House, Chairman Peterson of the Agriculture Committee added some provisions that attempted to make Waxman-Markey more palatable to agriculture interests. One of those provisions was the deferral of a requirement in the renewable fuels implementation, deferring international indirect land use calculations for 5 years. Would you support the inclusion of something like that in the Senate?
Well, I would, but I'd still reject the bill. I mean, that doesn't help all the problems that you and I have been talking about in terms of how it's going to increase the cost and be a tax on the farmers of America aren't going to be helped by this bill. Now, if you had the bill, that provision would help a little bit, although that's not going to happen, because when they put that out, it was well known that that was going in just to pass the bill the next day. Well, that day, as a matter of fact, that's something that was put in early in the morning, in the wee hours of the morning before the vote took place. And so the people who are the far left environmental extremists, I call them the Hollywood elites, they would make sure that in conference anything like that would come out.
According to the latest head count, Senate Majority Leader Reid appears to be about 15 Democratic votes short right now of having a filibuster-proof majority on this matter. How do you see this playing out, and when do you see, if at all, climate change legislation coming to the floor of the United States Senate?
Well, I don't think they want to bring it to the floor. And the main thing they want to do with this bill is they've passed one in the House. They'll pass something out of the Senate committee, and then they'll go to this big United Nations meeting up in Copenhagen and say, see what we're doing there? So they don't want to have a bill defeated right before they go to Copenhagen. So I don't think that they'll bring it up on the floor. And by the way, if Harry Reid has said that they're 15 votes short, that I feel good about that. I count 25 votes short, but that's fine. 15 is good enough.
Finally, got to ask you, before the July 4th break, the Environment and Public Works Committee took up the Clean Water Restoration Act. An amendment by Senator Baucus was added to the bill that was supposed to make this easier for agriculture interests to support. Passed on a party line vote. Where is that legislation going?
Glad you're asking about it, Stuart, because nobody even knows about that. Historically, it goes back to the 1972 Clean Water Act. And that gave the EPA power, jurisdiction over the navigable waters of America, navigable. Well, ever since that, the power grab and the EPA, the left, has been trying to get more and more jurisdiction so that they can have jurisdiction over even farm ponds and everything else. And so the courts denied that, the Rapano case and the Swank case. And so what they're trying to do now is overturn those cases by saying, taking the word navigable out and saying that the EPA has jurisdiction over all water. We're talking about standing water in a field in an arid area of the country. So that would be devastating to farmers. And the Baucus Amendment didn't help it any. However, they're going to try to pass it, and we're going to try to have the same coalition that opposes cap and trade for the same reason should be opposing this intrusion on our ag community.
Oklahoma Republican Senator Jim Inhofe, the ranking member on the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. Senator Inhofe, thank you so much for joining us on AgriPulse Open Mic.
Thank you for the opportunity, Stuart.
AgriPulse Open Mic has been brought to you by the Michael Torrey Management Group, an experienced trade association management firm specializing in the agriculture and food industry. When your organization is facing change, experience matters.